This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart Radio, where our mission is preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And I always like to start out by saying that so that you can hear it from me, that we are about helping those who have been hurt by abortion. And when you stop to think about who that might involve, it is an amazing array of people. There are people who will say they were not affected by having had an abortion. Recently, a group of professional women approached the Supreme Court as part of the case about abortion facilities in Texas and whether or not they needed to be regulated. There have been others that have tried to say that abortion was a net good. Katha Pollitt's book, Pro, says, unapologetic and on demand because abortion helps women and it's good for our culture. Well, all of those things do not address what happens to the victim of abortion. What happens to the children? But we have joining us this time here on Cradle My Heart somebody who's uniquely positioned to address that part of the story. Henry Flowers is joining us, and Henry is serving as the Urban Outreach Director of Protecting Black Life, which is a part of Life Issues Institute in Ohio. Henry, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Henry's also a speaker and author. He is musically gifted as well. And Henry, your story is so striking. Tell us about what happened with your mom while you were still yet unborn.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity there. I certainly love sharing my story. And, you know, my mom's story is much, much deeper than mine, as my mother was 17 years old when she found herself already divorced, already being, there was just so much turmoil in the house between her mother and father, and there was alcoholism involved, and not to mention that the fact that she had been molested and sexually abused by her older brother for years, and none of the parents did anything about it. And so now she's 17, she's already got two little girls, she's already divorced, and everything is falling down around her. And she finds out she's pregnant, again, by this, what was supposed to be her husband forever. He's now gone, and she's pregnant again. And so certainly she thought that she could take care of two kids better than she could take care of three. And my mother was attempting an at-home abortion procedure in 1972 with the assistance of her sister, who was older. Her sister was in a nursing business and actually used this procedure on herself two times to abort two pregnancies. And I am thankful that my mother's attempt at the at-home abortion did not work, because I am here now because of that, being a stand for those who cannot stand for themselves.
What a story. And are you well? I mean, I've met abortion survivors. We've interviewed on this program Melissa Oden and others who survived an abortion attempt. And Melissa has said that, you know, people will question her story because she's healthy and well, unlike others who have suffered a physical deficit as a result of the abortion upon their lives. Tell us about that.
It's funny that when you talk about sharing your story and the idea of people questioning your story, the difference between...
Oh, I know. And I...
you know, but for me, with the opportunity that I have to speak, it's really a powerful moment when I bring my mother on the stage. And we share our story together. And so someone could question me and suggest that I'm being sensational, but when they hear it from my mother and she tells her part of the story and about the procedure that she used, and, you know, it was a very, very simple procedure that, of course, I would never go into detail about because I would never want anybody to know what actually is possible. But, yeah, you can question me all day long, but my mother has no problem sharing the story. And we together, when we share our story of redemption and forgiveness and healing, I believe we impact the lives of many people all over the world. And we're going to continue to do it as long as we live.
You know, Henry, go a little bit deeper on this idea that people would question it, because, you know, I've felt that, you know, struck a little chord with you, as it should have, because, you know, when others have talked about this, it's a very ugly thing to accuse someone who's telling you their life story and a very tender part of it of propaganda, essentially. I think that's what the charge is. Say a little bit more about that and maybe the varying ways that people have received your story.
Yeah, well, the people who have received my story are mostly the people who are taking the same stand as I take, protectors of those who can't protect themselves, the defenders of the unborn. When I debate, and I really, really enjoy a good debate, whether it's on social media or person-to-person or over the phone, when I debate with people who push back against pro-lifers, as we're called, and talk about women's rights and all of the other things that they tout, what I hear more than anything else is an agenda. And that agenda really, for the most part, can be summed up very simply. Many people want to live their lives the way they want to live their lives without anybody telling them that what they choose is right or wrong. They want to escape consequences of their own personal decisions. And when those things affect the lives of unborn children, there needs to be somebody who takes a stand against that agenda. And that's who I am, and that's who my mother is, and that's who all of us are in the pro-life work. We're just taking a stand against people's agenda and saying, hey, it's not okay to kill unborn children. And if you want to continue to believe that it is, you go right ahead and do that, but I will always be a voice for those unborn children.
Henry Flowers is our guest. And Henry, as we think about your way of expressing this and the places that you're willing to go and have gone for it, I know a big part of your emphasis and focus is on youth, and particularly young males who are in need of mentoring and leadership. What do these young men need to hear? What's the issue? Because you're uniquely positioned to share that with us.
That's a great question, and I certainly loved just the opportunity to be able to get to the heart of the issue, because I believe that abortion and pro-life, it's not a women's issue, you know, especially in the black community, which many blacks believe that abortion is a white Republican issue. It absolutely is not. This is as much a women's issue as it is a men's issue. Men, these young men, never... No young man ever raised his hand in school when they were asking what you wanted to be when you grow up. No young man ever raised his hand and said, hey, I want to be a police officer, or I want to be a firefighter. And no other third young man ever raised his hand and said, hey, I want to be a guy who has a baby mama from here to the Bahamas and all kind of baby mama drama. Nobody signs up for that. These young men get to a place where they live their lives based upon their sexuality. They live their lives pursuing sex and pleasure and the things that give you the temporary things that we think we need in order to get through the day. And there is produced an unplanned pregnancy through that situation, and they just want relief from what they see is a problem. And so I believe that when we tap into that issue and we focus on the right things and we go after the young men who need mentors and they need hope and they need to be shown how to provide for themselves as well as for a family, then we really get down to the heart of the issue and we begin to solve numerous problems.
You know, I spoke with a young woman who is African-American, and she just asked me what I do, and I told her my book is called Cradle My Heart, Finding God's Love After Abortion, and she said, that's very interesting. You know, I have this issue in my past. And then she started naming her family members, her friends, and how many had had abortions and when they had had them. And she said, it's just so commonplace in my world, yet, you know, I'm 33 years old, and I was young. I was trying to protect my college career, and I wish I hadn't done that. But I sensed from her not only that personal regret, but how to even voice that in a place, and this isn't unique to the Black community, but it's perhaps magnified, how to voice, you know, this regret, these pangs, in a place where it's so accepted and where to say so would be almost to be accusing others of having done something wrong, too.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like there is a wholesale desire not to talk about it, to just push it under the rug and to let it be something that just happens. And you get to the place where if you want to bring up these things, like in a church setting or in a school setting, you're ostracized and you're accused of being a bigot and you hate women and all this other kind of foolishness. But the real meat of the matter is that abortion affects people in ways that you will never understand unless you have been one of those people. I struggled with being valued and being accepted and my own personal worth and these kinds of things. And so when I was 20 and I dropped my girlfriend off at the abortion clinic because at that time in my life I was living just for myself, that day stuck with me. It stuck with me and it still sticks with me today because I know that a life was taken for the sake of my own convenience. And I think about it often. I wish I had done something differently because I look at the person that I am now and I say, I certainly could have provided for that child. I certainly could have been a good dad. And so there's a certain sense of guilt that I feel when I look at my firstborn son and I tell him, son, you are my firstborn son, but you're not my first begotten son. And I share things with him to hope that he will never get into that situation again. And so it has an effect, not just on women, but lost fatherhood is something that is not talked about.
Hmm. And so I'll give you the opportunity to speak to women who are listening who found themselves at the receiving end of what happened with you, that you somehow just decided you weren't going to be the father of this child, you know, reflecting the reality of what was actually happening there. Now that you, you know, have the opportunity to make these amends within your family, I imagine you would handle things, of course, very differently. What is your message to the women who are still grieved by men who did not come through for them?
Mm-hmm. My message is very simple. First of all, there is forgiveness available for you. And I understand the guilt that you have been carrying for years, and I just want you to know there is forgiveness available for you. I have received it for myself, and it's available for you. The second thing is hope. There's hope. There is a movement of men who are about the business of helping our young men to become great men. There are people who have dedicated their lives to mentoring these young men and to giving them hope and health and provision to where that they can actually go out there and work and become a man of means. And these things are in action, and there's information available to you that can cause you to be able to help that young man that you might be thinking about, because you know he needs help, especially when 79% of blacks are born to a single-family household. You know there's a deficit, there's a breakdown in the family. But there's also some things that are going on that are helping to heal those wounds, and so there's hope. And then, finally, there is help in the pregnancy centers where there are men waiting there. We call it the bullpen. I've been building the bullpen in pregnancy centers across the nation where we just get a group of men who will volunteer their time to cover hours at the pregnancy center so that if a young man comes in, he's there to say, "Hey, I'm Henry. I'm a volunteer here. How can I help you through this situation, young man?" And there's an opportunity to mentor him, not just that day, but for the rest of his life if he's willing. And so there's forgiveness, there's hope, and there's help. And there is going to be a change made in the hearts of these young black men, and I'm going to be a part of it.
That is so awesome, Henry. And, you know, as I think about that, I want to really underline what you've said here about the fact that the Pregnancy Help Center, the Pregnancy Help Movement, is available to women and men who have been hurt by abortion, as well as those who are facing pregnancy difficulties right now in terms of, you know, I can't have this baby, the timing is wrong, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody ought to know this phone number, 1-800-712-HELP. That's the helpline that's answered 24/7, and they will connect you with a center near you that can give you the type of resources and support that Henry is talking about here. 1-800-712-HELP, H-E-L-P, and we've got that on the blog roll at cradlemyheart.org. Or you message me, we'll get you connected, because that help is available and there are people who are willing to give it to you. Henry Flowers is our guest. He is with Life Issues Institute in Cincinnati, Ohio, serving as their urban outreach director of Protecting Black Life. And he also has a ministry of his own to reach out to youth, particularly black men, young black men who are in need of mentoring and leadership. Henry, as I think about your story, that you survived an abortion attempt by your mother using a method that had completed abortions on other family members, how did your mother break this news to you? Tell me about that conversation. And this is, you know, when women have had an abortion and now they have children and they struggle with, should I tell my child and how should I and when should I? I'm sure that we can learn a great deal given how you have not only survived the attempt on your life by abortion, but you survived hearing that news, and now you're thriving and carrying the message that there's a better way. Tell me about that conversation with your mom. I'm sure there was more than one, but how did she tell you this news?
There certainly was a conversation with my mother, and I'll never forget the look on her face, because I had that conversation in person where I told her that I actually know that she tried to abort me as a child. And there was certainly a look of horror and disbelief on her face. And the way I found out was when I was 30 years old, I got a phone call when I was just it was just funny how you get a timely phone call, just discouraged, working corporately, and just wasn't fulfilling the joy in my life that I wanted. And my aunt called me, and she said, "Hey, listen, I'm not really sure why I'm telling you this, but I just got a sense that you're discouraged, and I want to share something with you, that you shouldn't be here." And the conversation went on, and this is the aunt that successfully performed the abortions on herself, and this is the aunt that was in the bathroom with my mother trying the same procedure. And she said, "Listen, nephew, you need to get about the rest of your life, and you need to live the rest of your life powerfully, because you are basically living on house money," so to speak. And that is exactly what I did. And that awakened something in me where I knew why I was pursuing my career as a public speaker. It all started coming together. I knew why I couldn't forget about the abortion that I paid for at 20 years old. Everything started to come in together, and I started getting involved in pro-life issues and started seeking people who would help me get my story and get my story heard. And I went to my mom, and I said, hey, Mom, listen, not only do I love you, not only do I forgive you, but I'm going to facilitate you and me being able to move into an area where we can take our story and we can encourage and inspire the hearts of people all over the world. And my mother embraced it.
Hmm. Beautiful. You know, so was it traumatic in the beginning, especially to not hear from your mother, but from a third party? I mean, it sounds like your aunt was so spiritually guided in this that my guess is that it was not. But, you know, this is the concern as women think about, and men think about, you know, discussing an abortion in your past, that there's a sibling missing, as you shared with us that you had to do with your son. Short term, was that hard for you to accept, or did you just simply understand that God's hand was all over it?
It was both. I certainly understood that God's hand was all over it, and all of the signs, and like I said, everything had been started to add up. But the other side of it was that I began to think about the abortion that I had, and the coin kind of flipped on me, and I said, wait a minute. I survived an abortion, but yet my child didn't. And so there was a huge amount of guilt there for a good little while. And so when I talk to people about the forgiveness that's available, just understand that this is not something that I'm generically talking about. This is something that I have experienced. I have gone through abortion recovery for men. I have mourned the death of my child. I was actually able to name my child through the course of that weekend course, and this was something that transformed my life in a new way. And so all of the guilt subsided, and it released me to be able to fully do what I'm doing now, and to be able to take up my bags and throw all of my clothes into the car and drive to Cincinnati, Ohio. Didn't know a soul. I just knew that I had been called to speak for those who couldn't speak for themselves. And it's something that I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And so I laid all of the guilt down, and all of the stories and all of the reasons that were added on top of that guilt. And I said, here's my life. This is what I'm going to do with it for the rest of my life. I'm giving my life for life.
The young woman that I met recently, and many others whom I've met through the years, were very surprised to hear about the emphasis in the abortion industry to eliminate black lives. It's alternately called black genocide. Statistics don't lie. In New York City, more black babies are aborted than born. That is a fact. And although African Americans make up 13% of our population, they account for 37%. Of the abortions that occur. And so, you know, I have a burden for that, and I'm sure you do too, but there's a real barrier in the black community to that message. Talk about how you overcome the resistance to the message of the devastation that abortion has done in the black community especially.
That's a great question. I believe that abortion is a symptom. It is not the problem. Abortion is a symptom of a greater problem, which is the breakdown of the family. And at the heart of that is the moral decay of the human condition. And so when I go to pastors and I speak to them and I talk to them about how to attack the life issues without necessarily harping on abortion from the pulpit, because it is certainly divisive. And these pastors have salary and church members and staffers and all of these things that they have to think about before they begin to do something that could possibly divide their congregation. But what I tell them is, hey, listen, this is about us empowering the hearts of our young people and giving them hope and helping them to live beyond their sexuality. It's about empowering our young girls to understand that, hey, listen, you can live your life beyond the dating game. And there's an opportunity for you, even at 13 or 12 or 14 years old, for you to begin to cast your vision down the road and grab a hold of the things that you think you want in the future and begin to work on those things right now. And so when you turn it into a youth empowerment movement, which really is what it is, then I think we do a better job of bringing people together.
Henry Flowers IV with the Life Issues Institute, and I really appreciate your story as well as you taking the time to share it with us today. Thank you, Henry.
Thank you so much for having me on. Anytime.
And now stay with us. Coming up on Faith Radio, we'll take a look at some of the top stories on the life issue in the news this week. And our phones will be open too. Jot down the number 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Good evening, and thank you for being with us on this Palm Sunday. I hope that it has been a blessed day for you. I know that in many churches this morning, there was a procession led by children waving the palm branches. And that is always just a moving and sweet time to think about the fact that little children get the story of Jesus. They get it. They can understand it. And his life has been one of demonstrating truth for us, embodying truth, embodying love, embodying life and sustenance. And even children can understand that, believe and benefit from it. And Palm Sunday is such a beautiful reminder of that and a way to usher in the Holy Week. I hope that you have some plans, as I do, to make it a special week. Whether or not you started out Lent that way, the 40-day period of Lent is winding down now. That we're in the final week of it, the last 8 days today. You know, tomorrow will be the last 7 days before we again celebrate the resurrection, the center of our faith. But it's not too late to do something special with this week. And I pray that this evening you will spend some time with the Lord asking him how you can mark it. Because I know, as I have done that at different times in the past, whether it be a Lenten journey or some other time that I set aside for spiritual renewal or growth or reflection, God is so honors those efforts on our part. He so honors those impulses in his direction. And so that's my prayer for you tonight, that this would really be a holy week and a time of drawing closer to God's presence in your life. I am your host for Cradle My Heart Radio, Kim Cotola, and tonight we have a pro-life resource for the men as a follow-up to our conversation with Henry Flowers. And so impressive, his articulate voice as well as his leadership to step into the role that God has given him. Really, just really blessed me, and I hope you too. And I also know that there is such a need for such voices, that abortion affects men equally, but not in the same ways as it affects women. And so men need the company and the spiritual nurture of other men to recover after abortion, and tonight's resource is a reflection of that. It's a book called Fatherhood Aborted, The Profound Effects of Abortion on Men. It's written by Guy Condon and David Hazard. Guy Condon, one of the early leaders in the pregnancy help movement through CareNet. And the book tells his story as well as the stories of many men impacted by abortion personally. And I want to share just a section of one of those stories with you tonight to maybe spark your interest in this book if you've not heard of it before. 1-800-811-3003. It's a great resource for anyone who has been impacted by abortion as a man. And if you are a man who has not participated in abortion, but you want to understand the issue better, I think this book would be a great resource for you. From Fatherhood Aborted, this is the story of Jake and Marianne. About to graduate from medical school, swamped with massive student loans and an intern's grueling schedule, Jake encouraged his fiancée, Marianne, to abort an unplanned pregnancy. Having been raised in a very religious and moral family, Marianne did not want to embarrass herself and her family and quickly agreed. But afterward, with the pressures of finishing medical school and then starting into practice, it was relatively easy for Jake, who tended to be cool and analytical anyway, to put the event out of his mind. But an event like abortion doesn't simply go away. A couple years after Jake finished medical school, he and Marianne were the parents of a 2-year-old son. And their marriage seemed to have more than its share of disturbances. Communication was poor. Jake felt Marianne had little interest in sex. An air of estrangement hung between them. And then the dreams became an issue. For some time, Marianne had endured the terror of a recurring nightmare, which grew more vivid and violent until she woke up in tears, and it was always the same. She was floating in a warm ocean, feeling the waves peacefully lulling her. Suddenly, a dark shadow circling in the water. A huge body slamming against her, the shark's teeth tearing her apart, blood in the water. And in time, Marianne made the connection between the dream and the abortion, and she began to seek help. But Jake, still the cool analyst, downplayed it as part of Marianne's more emotional nature. But then keeping a cool and aloof professionalism as a doctor was something on which he prided himself. Several more years went by before a chance event triggered something deep inside Jake. Marianne's close friend was vacationing in a lake when a sandbank collapsed, pitching her children into the water, and tragically her 3-year-old son drowned. When Jake heard the news, it was like a powerful fist had punched him in the soul. Every day as a doctor, he'd made life and death decisions and seen many tragedies, but maybe it was the mental picture of an innocent little boy playing, unsuspecting, on a sunlit bank above a peaceful blue lake, then plunging to his death in the chilly waters. It was also cold, and it caused something inside Jake to crumple. He wept and wept. During med school, while studying the wonders of the human body, Jake had been convicted that there must be a creator, but after their marriage, Marianne had become more involved in her church. Jake, though not religious, at least left himself open to God, but now, for the first time, he began to pray. Why is this happening to me? Why am I falling apart over this kid's death? One day while driving to the hospital, thinking of nothing but his morning rounds, he was surprised by an answer that materialized out of the blue. You're experiencing pain now at the death of this little boy because the baby you aborted was a boy, your first son. This is an excerpt from the book Fatherhood Aborted by Guy Condon and David Hazard. If you'd like to receive a copy tonight, join us. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. We'd be happy to get a copy of the book into your hands with your question or comment that you're willing to share with us on the air. 1-800-811-3003. And the rules are that you do not have to give your name. You can, of course, off the air, provide that for us, which we hold in very strict confidence, just so we can mail you the resource. But on air, you can choose an alias or say, I wish to remain anonymous. We understand the need for privacy here on Cradle My Heart Radio, too. We're reading from Fatherhood Aborted, 1-800-811-3003. And there's just a little bit more to the story that I want to share because I think it really gets to the heart of the issue for so many men. Again, Jake, after keeping his emotions at bay, hears You're experiencing pain now at the death of this little boy because the baby you aborted was a boy, your first son. Veering over to the curb, Jake leaned his head against the steering wheel. A pain welled up from deep in his stomach and tears. Alone, he wept for his lost son, saying over and over, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." That was just the beginning of healing for Jake. Seeking a Christian counselor, he was able to revisit the time of the abortion and to prayerfully walk through not only the events, but the attitudes and emotions that had motivated his actions. And it was the first time Jake had made himself this open to God, also the first time he had allowed himself to feel the pain of the event. Deep inside, his spirit had always sensed the terrible tragedy and loss of the child's life, but Jake had blocked the pain to keep himself from feeling it. Blocking pain is, of course, a very human and self-protective reaction. As we saw earlier in Fatherhood Aborted, the book says, men use many things, such as alcohol, drugs, and other escapes to medicate and numb interior pain. To begin healing, Jake needed to see how his cool and aloof attitude, saying, "I must keep an objective, unfeeling distance from the pain of human struggle, suffering, and loss," was the self-centered stance that drove him to pay for the death of his first child. Rather than endure the added struggles of having a baby while still going through med school, rather than face the pain of family embarrassment, Jake had let an icy reason cause the decision to abort. His emotional coolness kept him from connecting to the child he'd fathered. Cold objectivity helped him anesthetize the sadness, pain, and guilt that comes when one is responsible for killing a child. Interestingly enough, despite all of Jake's defense mechanisms, his spirit had nonetheless registered the true horror of such an unnatural act. It's also easy to see how Jake's chosen painkiller, his ability to distance himself from struggle and hurt in order to make clear-headed professional decisions, contributed to problems in other areas of his life, such as his inability to communicate on an emotional level with Marianne or to experience intimacy with her. A great deal of objectivity is necessary in most professions, especially the medical professions, when human lives are at stake. And the best, most rational, and calmly executed decisions must be performed by as precious seconds tick by. But the same kind of cold objectivity is deadly in a person's emotional life. Jake's growth to whole manhood began when he opened himself to God and allowed God to reach through the wall of objective thinking and unblock the pain. So recognizing how his so-called strength became his greatest weakness, Jake has been able to enter into a deeper and richer kind of manhood than ever before, experiencing new intimacy with Marianne, connecting deeply with his children, and learning how to know God's presence and help in his life. That's from Fatherhood Aborted by Guy Condon and David Hazard. It's our pro-life resource tonight for our callers to Cradle My Heart Radio, and we have a copy for you if you'll join us at 1-800-811-3003, 1-800-811-3003. The emotional aspects of lost fatherhood are covered in the book. Of course, as you've heard there, the spiritual aspects are covered as well. Helping men to get in touch with emotions, not only over the abortion issue, but in general, you know, as a cultural exercise, is something that this book does a great deal to address. And it also takes on this attitude that men become subject to after abortion of being a fugitive. It masquerades as drive and ambition at times. But what happens in the spirit of a man after abortion is that he becomes vaguely aware that he's on the run in certain situations and avoiding particular people. He may like to see himself as a man who can face his problems and act with confidence, but the truth is he sometimes knows that he's running from challenges and a lot of things that make him uncomfortable, and it doesn't make him feel good about himself. So the book opens with the story of Ben, aware that In some ways, he's like a fugitive running from a truth that he doesn't want to face, that began years ago with an event that he would like to erase. And it's the story of Ben in junior college dating a woman, and within 6 months, she became pregnant. He drove her to the clinic, nervously thumbed through magazines waiting, not prepared for the dull pain that he saw in her eyes when it was over. He dropped her off at her home later, walked out the door and kept going, knew it was over. Saw each other a couple of times, but they never dated again. He wasn't proud of himself, but it happened to a lot of couples, right? Nobody had to know. That was the end of it. But it was far from over for him. In a way, it had only begun. His failure to deal with it drove so many things, because when we experience feeling-driven, but something is actually driving us, there is a time that will come when we will have to come to terms with it. Fatherhood Aborted addresses this fugitive phenomenon and so much more. And a copy is yours tonight at 1-800-811-3003. Join us here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
We are here for you week in and week out, bringing you great conversations about finding God's love after abortion. And preventing abortion is something that is always at the heart of what we do, helping you make a better choice, helping you understand truth from God's perspective, and really from a logical perspective, from a medical perspective, a philosophical perspective. The case for life is so clear. Medical science has proven without doubt. In any embryology textbook you'd care to look at, you will see life begins at conception with a distinct, living, and whole human being coming into existence from the very beginning. There is no question that life begins at conception. The question we wrestle with is philosophically, when does human life have value? But it really helps to understand that from conception forward, you are the embryo, the zygote that you once were. We don't become something different as we develop. We simply develop. You and I are the embryos we once were. And so there's no significant difference that would justify killing us now that would have justified killing us then. It's simply a matter of development. Being human is what gives humans value. Human nature is what gives us value, not developmental landmarks. And so as we think about this, and we think about the fact that it's wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being, and abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being, therefore abortion is wrong, we see that logically there's such a strong case for life, unassailable, really. And thinking about abortion in these ways, I think is so helpful to remove so much of the shame that we experience and that I know men experience as well as do women. Men experience it in a different way, though, because, you know, in the God-given role of provider and protector, and yes, the role in procreation, men understand that when they have not protected the weaker in their care, the woman, the child, that they have in some fundamental ways failed at what God has called them to do. It's not a fatal failure for them. You know, they can recover from it. Men can recover spiritually from abortion, and it is, of course, the same process as women need to seek, allowing that godly sorrow to bring on the gift of repentance so that we begin to think about abortion in an entirely new way. We began to relate to the child. We began to see that there was a need there to behave differently, that we did not do, and that we can repent of and begin to walk out our new mindset that comes as we follow the logic, the philosophy, the medical truth, and of course the spiritual truth, because God's word says we are not to shed innocent blood. That's what we need to know from the Bible regarding abortion. Abortion is not a morally complex issue. As soon as we understand that the unborn, the preborn, they are one of us. They are members of the human family, deserving of equal protection. 1-800-811-3003. If this is a lesson that you have learned too late as a man, tonight's pro-life resource, I think, is extremely helpful. Fatherhood Aborted, The Profound Effects of Abortion on Men, is by Guy Condon and David Hazard. And it's not just a way to describe the problem. It's also a prescription. It talks at great length about the process that it takes for men to heal after abortion. And it talks about the spiritual battle because, you know, whether or not we engaged the question of whether or not to have an abortion on a spiritual level, it is a spiritual decision because it's a matter of life and death. And so God is the God of our deepest needs. And I really appreciate that section of Fatherhood Aborted because helping men to look to God for their needs, helping men to admit that they have needs, helping men to reach out for help with their needs. And, you know, maybe you can only do it through the pages of a book or listening to a radio program, doing it in some way that does not identify you face to face with someone else. But this book encourages men to take inventory of the need for approval, the need that we have to be loved and that men in particular have to be loved in a particular way, the need that men have for freedom, the need men have for sensual engagement, and then how to be the need to be the man that God intends you to be. Help for all of these needs is something that is available. And the book is a great way to start, and we have copy for you at 1-800-811-3003, and we would love to hear from you. It's not that we're giving equal time, but next week we're going to be welcoming the leader of Feminists for Life. Sarah Foster is working on campuses not only to advance the idea that women deserve better than abortion, but also to uphold pregnant couples on campus. To be pregnant and in college is one of the most difficult things that young adults face. And as you heard in the story of Jake and Marianne from Fatherhood Aborted, too often couples from quote-unquote good Christian families make the choice in order to protect the reputation of their families or to protect their future. But one of the things that I think has been so helpful as I've spoken on the issue of abortion and making a better choice and choosing life and preventing abortion is this idea that being pregnant is not a sin. Randy Alcorn first introduced me to that idea with his little book, Why Pro-Life, which is another great resource. We have that from time to time on offer here at Cradle My Heart Radio. But the blog for Every Mom has a couple of posts that you can access if you'll go to their blog that say unwed pregnancy is not a sin. And wow, did that really turn around my thinking? Because in one of these articles, which is just wonderful, written by Chad Ashby, who's pastor of College Street Baptist Church in Newberry, South Carolina, he mentions the fact that, you know, pregnancy resource centers are a place where the news of an unplanned pregnancy is met with joy and celebration. And that is very unlike the response that many get as young adults share that news. But they stand in the place of Elizabeth, who welcomed the news for Mary when she talked about the fact that she was expecting as an unwed mother of our Lord, Jesus Christ. And Elizabeth said to her, blessed is the fruit of your womb, in Luke 1:42. There are people who welcome expectant mothers with warm, receptive, and loving arms, treasuring the fruit of the womb as the wondrous gifts from God that they are, no matter how they were conceived. Many of our congregations couldn't dream of responding this way, even when we are technically pro-life. How do we follow the example of the pregnancy centers across the country? How do we create this kind of celebratory, supportive, loving culture in our churches for moms and for men and dads? Well, we need to cultivate confession. We need to have a biblical view of sexual immorality. And we have to cultivate an atmosphere where all pregnancy is celebrated. You know, once we accept the realization that unwed pregnancy is not a sin and that it should be celebrated as a gift of life from God, we'll truly see what God can do to fight back the terrors of abortion. If you don't know where to start, find your local pregnancy center for healing after abortion and to become part of the solution yourself. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Kim Cotola. Remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. To learn more, go to cradlemyheart.org.